This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. And we're pleased to have you with us on the 55th birthday of the leader of our state, the Honorable John Bel Edwards, the 56th Louisiana governor. Only two surviving governors, Edwards and Bobby Jindal, who turned 50 years old in June. And we're here to talk about something that affects men of that age and many other ages for that matter. And as we get older, an old axiom is that if you live long enough and you're a man, you're going to get prostate cancer. And this is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. And we have an authority in the House who deals with this on a regular basis, Dr. Michael Castine from the Hematology and Oncology Center. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us about, first of all, prostate cancer is rampant. It's probably as evident in men as breast cancer is in women, but men generally don't talk about these things. They may among themselves, but they don't really have as much of a focus on it as far as events and that sort of thing, but it's important stuff, isn't it?
Yes, it's very important. We've known through the years that women are much more vocal about diseases, and they're very energetic about screenings, whereas men tend to be very slow in screenings and delayed. And we want this in Prostate Cancer Awareness Month to make it evident to men that screenings are very important.
And it can be determined often by a simple blood test as to whether there's a potential problem.
That's correct. We use the PSA test as a tool to monitor men through the years and perhaps go further with screening and testing depending upon that test.
And anything above 4 is considered in the danger zone. Is that correct?
Well, we use that as a guideline, yes, but actually changes are also important. So even if the level is below 4 but makes a significant change, that might prompt the doctor to run more tests.
Now, biopsies for men who are being examined for potential prostate cancer, they are considered dangerous in and of themselves. How dangerous are they?
Well, I think they're fairly safe. I think the danger, the main danger probably comes through infection and bleeding and problems that might occur with the actual needle that occurs with the biopsy. But for the most part, it's a relatively standard and safe procedure, and things are improving. Although they still use ultrasound-guided biopsy techniques, there are some newer techniques that are coming about. So.
Your number is 877-217-5757. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email address. And this is a topic that, of course, is uncomfortable for some, and some may not want to call and go on the air, but it's okay, and it's important. And as mentioned, prostate cancer is certainly evident among men in this country. And as we live older, to be older, and up until very recently, the lifespan was increasing every year, the average lifespan. Men of a certain age are more prone to get it, right?
That's correct. As men become older, they have a longer exposure to their own endogenous hormones, and that's one of the risk factors is age and hormone exposure over time.
And I have a listener who's asking about testosterone, and there has been some discussion about a link between testosterone and prostate cancer. Is that a wives' tale, or is that the real deal?
Well, we know that men obviously produce their own testosterone and produce it late into their own life, and that's one of the reasons why prostate cancer develops, much like breast cancer in a woman, hormone exposure. So if we take outside testosterone and put it into a man, there should be some concern about that, and it should be governed in a very conservative way, and people should use it only for very specific reasons. Testosterone can drive cancers. As far as a cause of cancer, that's a more difficult link to make. But
you're saying if you have it,
it can drive it for sure.
Yes, meaning sir. That it could make it
worse. Right. Make it spread, make it worse, make it grow faster.
Correct. But I had a doctor tell me now, and as you can imagine, there is some disagreement within the fraternity, sorority, whatever you want to call it, you're in, but 17-year-old boys have more testosterone than anybody on the planet. Why don't they have prostate cancer?
Well, because they're still young, and they have many of the cancer protective mechanisms in their body that are still very effective. They have cancer suppressive genes that haven't been turned off. They have a really robust and vigorous immune system. And as we get older, little chinks in the armor begin to develop, and that's how cancer forms. It's usually a multi-hit disease where several things happen over time, and ultimately the cancer develops.
And prostate cancer is one of those that is controllable if it is caught early, but if it advances, it can be lethal.
That's correct. We still consider it a curable disease if it's caught very
early.
You're
actually saying curable.
Well, very early stages, caught very very soon and perhaps operated on. We do have long-term survivors without evidence of disease in those situations. But once it advances, even locally, an advanced disease can be very difficult to eradicate. And people can live a long time with prostate cancer. But ultimately, there are a lot of deaths that do occur. Yeah.
And it is a case in which years later, somebody with prostate cancer may end up getting bone cancer. If it's not caught early, it can come back to bite people, can it?
That's correct. Any cancer can come back to bite people, and the more advanced it is when it's found, the more likely it will. Prostate cancer does have a predilection for the bones, and those types of complications, especially in men, can be very devastating in later years.
And a listener asks, this is Peter calling from St. John Parish, writing from St. John Parish. He asks about what are the options? In the old days, maybe today, the most common procedure when somebody has prostate cancer is removal of the prostate. Is that still the first option?
It's one of the first options for people who are very early on. There are some studies being done looking at techniques that might do something like an ablation where a needle is placed into a very tiny prostate tumor. But again, those are studies that are being done right now. But most of the time it's removal if it's still contained within the prostate and there's no good evidence that it's outside. So a very high PSA or evidence of lymph nodes on a CAT scan or other things might make surgery less an option. And we might be defaulting more to systemic therapies of blocking hormones and radiation for people who might have locally advanced disease.
And I can speak from experience, a high PSA number, which I had once, very high, doesn't necessarily mean you have prostate cancer.
That's correct. So prostate tissue makes the PSA, and even in benign situations where the prostate may get larger over time, the PSA does not reflect cancer in some cases. That's correct.
But this is a simple blood test, and another listener, this is Jack on Highland, says when he goes to his regular doctor, they don't do a PSA test. Usually you have to ask for that, don't you?
Some doctors will do it as a matter of course, and some doctors will wait for the patient to ask. Screenings go back and forth in the literature, and the effectiveness of screenings is sometimes brought into question. And PSA screening as a sole tool has been brought into question in the past. And so that's probably what he's referring to.
877-217-5757 and talk at Talk Louisiana for Dr. Michael Castine of the Hematology and Oncology Clinic. And we'll go to Alondra Villarreal, says it is Mike in South Baton Rouge. Mike, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning. Good morning, Mike.
Hello, good morning. What PSA level is a concern in, or at what point do you have to be concerned about the PSA that's going on?
So most PSA labs will say that a level less than 4 is still normal. And so most doctors will use the level of 4 and above to bring in more testing. But if the level were to double or triple, say from a level of 0.5 to 2 within 1 year, that would probably prompt a doctor to do testing. So it's not just the absolute number where it is on the scale, but also the change that might matter.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. Now, is a 4 different from, let's say, a 35-year-old man and a 75-year-old man? If somebody has a 4 at 75, is that much of a cause of concern?
That's correct. Age is also a factor, and as we get older, it's common for our PSA to slowly creep up. And so a 4 in a 75-year-old is much less worrisome than a 4 in a 40-year-old.
And I've had other doctors say that at a certain age, if you have prostate cancer, ride it out. just take your chances. What do you think?
Well, there is data about expectant management or watchful waiting in some men with very early cancer. And so I think in some ways that's okay, but it has to be an aggressive program. Mm-hmm. And certainly in very elderly men with very low-grade disease, many times the treatments are much worse than the disease itself, and so we will ride it out.
All right. We're getting some questions here online. And once again, if you'd like to join us on air, it's 877-217-5757 for Dr. Michael Castine, Hematology and Oncology Clinic. And he is talking about Prostate Awareness Month, and men have to deal with this. Protecting and caring for your prostate are important. And then we have some questions about, number one, how can you do that? And secondly, another question about the options. You mentioned them, but the ablation in particular, is that something that is the wave of the future? We're back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Alondra Villarreal is producing, and she's waiting for you to call, 877-217-5757. We're continuing our discussion for another segment with Dr. Michael Castine of the Hematology and Oncology Clinic in Baton Rouge, and it is Prostate Awareness Month, and many American men face this. I think one out of six, one out of six men will get prostate cancer. And then there are others who may not know they ever had it, but it's a good idea to get your – how often should people be checked? Turn his mic on, please. Go ahead.
If they're doing well, they should be checked annually. And the one in six number is true. But if you have a primary family member, a brother, a father, or someone very close to you with prostate cancer, your odds may be as much as one in three.
One in three. So on the average, what, every 6 months, a blood test every year?
Once a year is probably adequate for most healthy men. If there is a change, then the frequency of the testing becomes closer together.
All right. Rick in Sherwood Forest. Rick, you're on with Dr. Castine. Hi, Rick. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I had a question. I have an enlarged prostate, and I've been taking saw palmetto. It seems to help a little bit, somewhat. But I was also wondering if that was a good cure or something that helped. And also, what is good to eat for your prostate?
Great question. So saw palmetto can have some effects on the prostate with regards to size and might help shrink the prostate some. It's a hormonal effect primarily through a plant-like substance that's similar to hormones. But always consult with your doctor when you're taking outside supplements and be sure that they're safe for you. And the second question?
He talked about diet.
Diet. That's correct. Thank you. So for diet, I would say that, you know, a low-fat diet that's probably higher in protein and lower in carbohydrates, and I think that's where most of us are leaning in our diets these days through the many different diet fads that have been out there. But low-fat diet is probably the most important for prostate and breast carcinoma. Those fats and cholesterols, they're very similar to testosterone and estrogen, and they sort of form the backbone of production for those chemicals. And those higher fat and high cholesterol diets may actually promote those hormone mm-hmm. production.
And tell me if I'm wrong, but I've heard that all those other factors that contribute to heart disease, for example, like obesity and smoking, all of that could affect prostate health as well.
That's correct. We know that habits like smoking are linked with many types of cancers, and then obesity is as well.
Jim on I-10. Jim, good morning. You're on with Dr. Castine.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, it's Joseph.
Joseph, I'm sorry.
That's all right. How you doing, Dr. Castine? I used to work in Tower 2. I had prostate cancer. I had diagnosed with a Gleason scale of 23, and it was all concentrated in one area. Had robotic surgery, and 2 years, and they told me everything was going to be fine. You know, I will be able to be pretty much active again. 2 years later, it came back, and I had radiation for 7 weeks, and they gave me a shot every quarter. And so I was, you know, wondering, okay, will it come back a third time? Because after my prostate was removed.
All right. Many people believe that once you get that prostate removed, you're home free. That's not always the case, is it?
No, it's not always the case. And there are two main ways prostate cancer can fail. One is locally within the prostate bed where it was, and second is distantly in some other organ like the bones or the lung or the liver. So what the doctors, it sounds like their strategy was that they thought you had a local recurrence, and radiation was to the local bed to try to eradicate that. And then the hormones are meant to maybe scavenge any outside disease that might be lingering in some other organ. And so that's a very common approach, and it can be very effective for very long-term remissions for patients. So don't be discouraged. It's hard to use the word cure when a cancer comes back, but someone like you could have a very long-term remission, and you should keep close follow-ups with your physicians and be sure that you meet that timetable.
Baron in Woodchase. Baron, you're on with Dr. Castine. Hi, Baron. Good morning. All right.
My prostate removed about 23 or 24 years ago. And the last physical I took, my PSA number had moved up from just about zero to, I think, one or two. And I was wondering, what do I need to worry about with that?
Yes, sir. So you're the perfect person to be evaluated and assessed very closely. It's quite possible that you may have just a local recurrence where your prostate was, and the doctor should run the appropriate test to search that out. And there are some very good tests that are available now that are relatively new and can be very specific to the localization of that cancer. And they should take those tests and then talk to you about your options.
Thank you, Baron. Bill downtown. Bill, you're on with Dr. Castine. Good morning, sir.
Hey, both Grandpa and Dad died from prostate cancer at the end of their lives, and so I figure I'm one of those one in threes. What are the things? What are the changes I should be looking out for? I try to eat well and don't smoke like they did, all that kind of stuff.
Right. So prostate cancer doesn't often present with many symptoms in the very early stages. That's why we believe that screening is an important tool to find it early. Prostate symptoms would be things like changes in urination patterns and habits. It would be very rare to have something like bleeding. That would be late stage problems. So again, it can be a silent disease in the early stages. And so it's most important that you have your screening with that health history. You probably should have a urologist help you with those screenings in addition to your primary care.
Here's a question from a listener about an enlarged prostate. Does it necessarily mean any kind of cancer might be involved, or could it cause cancer down the line?
So an enlarged prostate does not mean cancer necessarily. It can be completely benign, and there are men who develop benign prostatic hypertrophy, which is the enlarged prostate, or BPH. However, those men should be followed closely because cancer has a better way of hiding in that BPH, and so they do need to be monitored more closely.
All right. Tom in Woodland Ridge. Tom, you're on Talk Louisiana with Dr. Castine.
Hey, good morning. Nice to speak with you. Going back to, there is a procedure called UroLift that some doctors recommend for enlarged prostates. Does that have any impact positively or negatively on your potential for prostate cancer?
No, not the procedure itself. I would think more the large prostate, not the procedure.
Barry in Mid-City. Hi, Barry. Rabbi, you're on with Dr. Castine.
Hi. Thanks, Jim. Just wanted to report that 21 years ago, I had a radical prostatectomy. And I'm doing fine. I would encourage all men to regularly get tested.
And the rabbi just celebrated his 79th birthday, so he was 58 when this happened. Is that generally kind of the time when this happens?
Between the ages of probably 50 and 65 are probably the crucial years where surgery and prostatectomy becomes a strong consideration. Over 65, less so.
What about side effects?
Side effects
from
of
surgery.
Surgery. So the biggest side effects from surgery are changes in bladder habits and patterns, and some men can be left with low-grade incontinence problems, although that usually gets better. The biggest side effect is usually the impotence that might go along with that. However, techniques are improved, and there are better things post-surgery that can help men with impotence.
And as far as that particular challenge, is prostate removal more of a cause of that than, say, radiation, or does it really matter?
It doesn't really matter. It happens in both. Surgery probably slightly more than radiation, but it can happen in both.
All right, and I have a listener reminding me we're short on time, so we'll keep Dr. Castine for a few more minutes, and then we'll hear from Mark Ballard, 877-217-5757. He wants to know about the ablation, which is another way of addressing this, and you referred to it, and he says he has a friend who has done well after having an ablation, which according to him, does not cause as many side effects. We'll find out from the authority, Dr. Michael Castine, 877-217-5757. We're back after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Mark Ballard of the Capitol Bureau, the man who heads it for the Advocate and Picayune, he's on deck, and we're finishing up with Dr. Michael Castine of the Hematology and Oncology Clinic in Baton Rouge. 877-217-5757. If you can get in under the wire, we'll try to get you on with Dr. Castine. But a listener wanted me to follow up on the ablation. That's a surgery this gentleman tells me a friend of his went to San Diego to get and has done very well, and apparently without the side effects that you just mentioned. Is that the wave of the future?
It may very well be for very early disease. Ablation is when a needle is placed in and either cold or heat is applied to the tumor to eradicate it. And in very small tumors, this can be done. And the University of California did have some data that they put out recently that showed good control with very little side effects. That's correct.
All right. And do we have another? Nope. So I'm not sure, but I'm waiting for Alondra to give me the cue. 877-217-5757. Is it Yolanda? Okay, Yolanda, you were on Talk Louisiana. Good morning, Yolanda.
Hi, we are the staff with Dr. Michael Castine in the Zachary office, and we don't have a question, but we want to thank him for all of the hard work that he does for the patients and his staff. We truly appreciate him.
All right, okay. Well, thank you, Yolanda. Very nice to get a pat on the back, and especially so on your radio. Now, another listener asked about radioactive seeds. You mentioned radiation. This is a different procedure, isn't it?
Correct. Radioactive seeds are actually implanted within the prostate to treat the primary cancer at initial diagnosis, and it can be a very excellent way of controlling the disease with a low-risk procedure. There can still be some downside toxicities that we mentioned before, but less so than with surgery.
All right. Kamira on I-10. Kamira, you're on with Dr. Castine. Good morning. Good morning.
Hello.
Yes. What is your question?
Hello.
Yes. What is your question?
I'm Dr. Kamira. I'm a physician. Like Dr. Castine, thank you very much for the informative program. Why is it nobody talks about the cancer alley in Louisiana? Why is it always so silent, and we have to read about it in the Guardian and international newspapers?
That's a great question. So those epidemiology studies, I'm not sure that they actually linked the malignancies to the actual plants and petrochemical industries like was first thought. And there was a much greater correlation between the poverty and tobacco along that alley that you're talking about. Now, you know, I'm sure there are some pockets of disease that we might say could be attributable, but that was my reading of Cancer Alley years ago.
Well, thank you, Dr. Castine. Informative topic, important topic, and as one out of six men will get prostate cancer in their lives, and if you have a father or a brother, your chances go to one in three. So it's important, and if you get it early, it's not necessarily a game changer as far as ending your life. And people who've had some side effects have told me that after overtime, they get better.
That's correct. The side effects can improve with time, and it's probably much better to act early and live disease-free for long periods of time than to let the cancer have its way.
And my dear friend Smiley Andrews, who writes 6 days a week for The Advocate, which employs the gentleman we're about to speak with, Mark Bauer, says, you can tell the age group of a bunch of men when at a certain age, they're all talking about their prostates. So.
Yes, sir. It does become a topic of conversation.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Mark Ballard, good to hear your voice. As is our Thursday custom, the man who heads the Capitol Bureau at the state capitol is with us. 877-217-5757 to join Mark. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
Since we're talking about health, Alondra Villarreal, who produced yesterday's governor's show, the governor made a little bit of an announcement yesterday, responding to a question from a fellow who said he was Nick and Crowley, and I guess he is Nick and Crowley, but he sure sounded like Jim Nickel, the lobbyist and former head of the Democratic Party to me. But here's Nick and Crowley asking the governor about what he would do on his birthday, and the governor made a revelation about his health. Alondra, can we hear from Nick
and
Crowley?
Good afternoon, you're on Ask the Governor. Hi, Nick.
Good afternoon, Jim, and thank you, Governor, for your tremendous leadership and work in both terms so far. But lighter question here. I grew up one of six, and my mom used to let me pick supper for my birthday and pick the cake. So I want to know, what are you going to eat for supper for your birthday, and what kind of cake are you going to have for your birthday? Happy birthday.
All right, Nick and Crowley.
Well, Nick, you know, I was listening a while ago when we went to a commercial break, and they were talking about pre-diabetes. I'm pre-diabetic, so I don't get the supper that I would want, and I don't get the supper I would have had last year, which would have been liver and onion served with grits and biscuits. But I am going to have a tuna steak tomorrow night, rare.
All right. That's the governor announcing on the show that he is pre-diabetic, so he's watching his intake, sugars and fats. And Mark, at 55, the governor appears to be in pretty good shape, but we can all do better, and I think that's good advice for all of us.
I think so, and certainly having rare tuna steak is not a hardship in my mind. So.
And probably some very good cooks.
I think that they do have a fairly good chefs over there.
I think so. I think so, and the governor, this one, obviously loves his job and the trappings of the job, and you get good eats when you're eating at the mansion, I hear. But Mark Ballard, the governor has his hands full. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I only hear as well, having never eaten over there. So.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever eaten there either. But I've eaten at other places, including Angola, and food was pretty good there, too.
It was pretty good there.
Probably some of the same people serving them food, too. But what about COVID and the governor and the president and vaccinations and checking at Tiger Stadium? Kind of. The governor continues to get some pushback for trying to make sure that people don't die of COVID-19.
Well, it is becoming a political issue. There's no doubt about that. The Republicans are saying that the governor and the president have gone too far. They're outside their constitutional authority to mandate vaccines or to come up with the plan, which is what they've done, is that require vaccines or getting tested regularly for COVID. So I imagine it'll continue to be a pretty tough partisan issue. And I think we're going to see it in the courts fairly soon as well.
And the attorney general has consistently been on the other side of the governor.
Well, and Republican attorney generals are putting together lawsuits to challenge what the president has wants to enact, mm-hmm. which is a rule requiring private employers to offer the vaccine to their employees or require the employees to get tested.
All right. 877-217-5757 for Mark Ballard. And I do want to note that a good friend of this show, a conservative, he was a member of the Republican Central Committee for many years, once head of the New Orleans Police Union when the union striked struck in 1979 and caused the suspension of Mardi Gras. Vincent Bruno, who also was the first person to publicly acknowledge that David Vitter was consorting with prostitutes, he died in New Orleans yesterday, 75 years old, from coronavirus. So Vincent was one of those who didn't want to be vaccinated, and he is gone, and he was a fine man. And Mark, he is like many others. He took his chances, and it didn't work out so well.
Yeah, I didn't know he had died. I'm sorry to hear that. But yes, there are a number of people that have decided, and apparently Louisiana has a privacy law that allows them to decide whether they're going to take a medicine or healthcare, and that they say is their personal decision.
David in Atlanta. David, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning, sir.
If I may say, I was a close personal friend of Mr. Bruno. The man had a heart of gold, and I will dearly miss him. You know, Steve Scalise was quoted as saying he's going to vote against President Biden's stimulus program, which would greatly help many projects in Louisiana and put people to work. But he claims it's not, it's too socialistic or something regarding that, when in fact, any student of politics knows Steve Scalise will do anything he can to take anything away from the president that would make the president look good in the view of the voters. And it's politics, pure and simple, and Steve Scalise is essentially a disgrace to Louisiana.
All right. Well, he's a man who survived a near-death experience and is in high places and presumably can use that to help Louisiana. But some would say the infrastructure plan, which he voted against, is very good for Louisiana. Your thoughts, Mark Ballard?
Well, actually, he hasn't voted against it, but he has spoken out harshly about the plan, and he's arguing that that there should be a separate plan for hurricane infrastructure, and that should be focused only on disaster related. And he believes that that there's too much involved, too many side issues in the bipartisan infrastructure plan that's before the House and that they'll be voting on this week.
Well, you're right. And, of course, Cassidy voted for it. Kennedy voted against. But my guess is that the five Republicans in Louisiana or in the U.S. House will all vote against it.
They seem to say that, yes. I mean, I've asked them, and it sounds like all but Garrett Graves, who is kind of saying, you know, if this and that, then I'll consider it. But it looks like all five are going to vote against it next week.
Well, Garrett Graves voted to negate the election. He voted against an investigation into the January 6th invasion of the Capitol. I would imagine he'll vote with his GOP cohorts on this as well. And we'll talk more with Mark. If you'd like to get in, 877-217-5757. We're back after this brief timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. If you'd like to get in under the wire with Mark Ballard, our Thursday contributor, perhaps our most popular guest. I get lots of folks saying they love to hear from Mark every week, and they miss him when he's gone. But your chance to talk with him today is available at talk@talklouisiana.org and 877-217-5757. James in Metairie. James, you're on with Mark. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Jim, and to you, Mark. Very, very sad to hear about the passing of Vincent Bruno. What a colorful life that guy had, complex individual. He will be state central committee member, I believe, of the Republican Party, among other things.
And nephew of Carlos Marcello, among other things.
Well, that's what I've heard, Uncle Carlos. Jim, I wonder if when David Vitter hears about Vincent's passing, if his reaction will be, well, Merry bleeping Christmas, do you think?
Well, David Vitter did not like Vincent, and that was mutually felt, and I doubt that David Vitter will be mourning, but he is a good Catholic, and my guess is that he will say a prayer for Vincent. And Vincent Bruno was a man who was an evangelical Christian, and like many evangelicals, he didn't like vaccines. He didn't like masks, and the odds, you know, we keep hearing these stories about people with vaccines, Mark, who end up dying. Well, the odds are much more in your favor if you get vaccinated.
Yeah, it's a very very small percentage of people who have been vaccinated that pick up the vaccine, I mean, pick up the infection and die from it. It's very small. This surge that we've been seeing over the summer is primarily people who have not been vaccinated. I mean, 90%, 95% of them who have not been vaccinated, and the deaths that arrive from this, the filling up of the hospitals and the deaths are basically people who are unvaccinated.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on with Mark Ballard. Hi, Phil.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, Mark. Now, I think have taken a political calculation to accept these deaths as part of doing business, as unavoidable casualties, like the tobacco companies denying that cigarettes cause cancer. I mean, they got to stick to the story.
All right. Phil always gives us something to chew on. And Mark, your thoughts?
Well, what he says is correct. I mean, that there's been a calculation among some partisans that, you know, that this is just, you know, part of life, and that what's more important is the authority that is granted to the executive, the balance of powers, and that sort of thing. And I think that that's what we're seeing playing out here.
877-217-5757 to get in with Mark before we part company today. And on his radio show yesterday, when the governor announced that he is pre-diabetic, he also he praised and defended state police. And, of course, most state police men and women are very good public servants, and the governor reveres law enforcement. I understand that, but there are some revelations that are quite unpleasant regarding state police, and this is a story that I don't think there's any doubt, Mark, will continue, and it's not just the Ronald Green case either.
No, apparently it's a lot more widespread than that, and there have been calls. Congressman Carter is asking for the Department of Justice, the U.S. Department of Justice, to take a look in and investigate in it, and I think that may actually happen. Because there have been so many incidents that are not as dramatic or as fatal as Ronald Green, but is questionable.
And like many other things, it seems to be centered largely along racial divisions. And if we live in a prejudiced world, we're going to have some law enforcement people who are prejudiced, and that's not good at any time, but especially so if that prejudice is imposed in ways that are unfair and perhaps even lethal to other citizens.
Yeah, and I'm glad this is probably too deep for the radio, but I'm wondering, you know, if it's a prejudice that they don't recognize that is kind of ingrained in the system and protocols and procedures that they use. I'm not sure that we're looking at openly racist troopers. I think we're looking at a system that kind of leans them in that way.
And troopers, as I say, by and large, are outstanding people, and the same is true of other law enforcement. But I think you can plainly see in Baton Rouge there are many law enforcement people who are not in very good physical condition and have a hard time chasing down a criminal. But state troopers, for the most part, they have to pass, I believe, a physical fitness test, and they are much better shape by and large than sheriff's deputies and police officers. And I say that because I see a lot of police officers who certainly can bench press more weight than I, but some can't. Paul in Opelousas. Paul, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning. Just a question. The state attorney general, which is Jeff Landry, is he involved in the investigation, or has he recused himself because of, you know, involvement? Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know where the attorney general is standing on any investigation of the state police.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, General Landry gives every indication that he will be a candidate for governor. And folks, we're 2 years away, 2 years and a month from the primary in 2023. That may seem like a long time. I remember Mary Landrieu telling me that when she ran for governor in 95, she ran for 3 years. And Landrieu, it Right now, he's running until he doesn't, and so is Billy Nungesser. And those two dislike each other quite a lot. Even if it's just those two, it will be quite a race, Mark, but my guess is that they'll have company on the ballot.
Yeah, I'm thinking so. And now is the time that the candidates need to line up support and money, really, if they're going to make a serious run for the governorship. And I'm thinking we'll have at least four or five candidates, just based on what I'm hearing about people sending out feelers.
And you noted that because of Hurricane Ida, we've now pushed back the election. Kyle Ardoin, the Secretary of State, recommended it. The governor endorsed it. Now the elections will be held later.
Yeah, a month later, it pushes it back. On the one hand, it kind of gives the candidates another month to campaign. And I mean, in Baton Rouge, you have the Cats Initiative, and that gives the that gives those supporters another month to try to persuade a whole passel of opponents to the bus system that that we really need one, and we need to fund it. And so, I mean, that gives them an additional month to do it. On the other hand, it pushes the runoffs into December, which traditionally have been a low turnout elections, which gives the kind of minority candidates an opportunity to win by making sure that they get all of their supporters out, because there won't be that many people voting in December.
Well, Hurricane Ida, again, Baton Rouge was spared what was thought to be a potential catastrophe, and there was some flooding, and let's not play that down, but compared to what could have been, just like, I mean, we were talking about Hurricane Nicholas, but just like Ida, we could have had it much worse, Mark.
Yeah, I think we lucked out with both Ida going about, the eye going about 20 miles to the east of us, and with Nicholas, which is kind of skirted to the north of us, and I think we did fairly well. And it is not to downplay that. Certainly, there was a lot of rain with Nicholas, and it certainly caused a lot of problems with people who have roof issues that were not repaired and won't be repaired for some time. So, yeah, on a whole, I think, you know, that we came out pretty good in Baton Rouge.
And some listeners say they enjoy me reading President Trump's emails to me. I have a feeling I'm not the only one on the list, but here's one saying, Jim, I have an exciting announcement. Herschel Walker, a football legend and fantastic candidate for the next senator of Georgia, is joining me in the great state of Georgia for what will be an epic rally. We have signed the first ever Trump football, and I want you to have it. This football is one of a kind, and I can't imagine anyone more deserving of it than you. You have 1 hour to enter before I reach out to the next patriot in line, friend. Signed by President Trump and Herschel Walker, the Trump Save America football. So,
how much money did you send them? Because when he reached out to me, it was I was supposed to accompany it with a contribution to his presidential campaign.
Yeah, well, the suggested amount is $150, but you know, I was a little short on change today. Jim in University Hills. Jim, you'll be our final caller for Mark. Hi, Jim.
Hey, I'm getting my mail-in ballot stuff from Secretary of State, but all the dates are now changed. Am I supposed to get another one? Does anybody know what the story is on the ballots that we've already received?
Yeah, that is a good question, and one I think that they're working out. And so I would say hang tight, let me find out.
There you go. And we don't have a whole lot of time, in fact, only seconds, but Gavin Newsom held on in a big way in California, almost 2-1. It was an amazing show of force as far as radio and television ads, but nothing much else. A lot of media types got rich on this, but California's the supposedly progressive state, sometimes can mess up as well. Mark, we'll save that for another time. Thanks as always. Have a great week. We'll call on you next week. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Stay safe and stay tuned.